Hi everyone, it's Denise Duffield Thomas here from deniseduffieldthomas.com, and you know how much I love that cheesy intro music. It makes me laugh every time I use it. But this is a special call today because I have a special guest. It's Naomi Findlay, who is an interior designer and a home stylist who helps people create wonderful spaces to live in. Now, I invited her because I love to talk about decluttering your environment and just surrounding yourself with positivity. And actually, I'm not great at the home stuff and the environment stuff. And as much as I always talk about decluttering, I just get into clutter all the time. So I wanted to invite Naomi on so she could give us her expertise around clutter and around creating beautiful spaces. So I just want to introduce and welcome Naomi. How are you today?
Hi, Denise. Thank you for such a lovely introduction.
You're welcome. It's really
the music
lovely to
made
have
me
you on
smile
here.
Too.
It's so cheesy, isn't it?
It's wonderful. I thought it was just me that was smiling through the recording. It's great.
Well, can you start by telling us your website and then also a bit of your background?
Absolutely. My website is www.silkstaging.com.au. As you mentioned, I'm an interior designer and stylist and a professional stager. So my work's a little diverse. I work with clients in helping prepare their properties for sale, where clutter is a number one no-no. And I also work with clients on setting their homes up, everything from decluttering and, you know, accessories and paints and all the things that interior designers and stylists do. So yes, but one of my pet things is clutter. So you've identified that very well, Denise.
Do you know what I'd love to hear first? Do you have any like real horror stories around clutter?
Oh.
With your clients?
I do. Funnily enough, I
can
do
you share some of them?
Yes, of course. I do have some clutter nightmare stories. I in the past had the pleasure of working with a beautiful family, and it was unfortunately a deceased estate, and the place was absolutely riddled with fake flowers. So I don't mean a little bit of fake flowers. I mean every table, every ledge, massive bunches of fake flowers that were covered in dust. And that was, it was very difficult because it was something that was, you know, the pride and joy of the people that had passed. And so the family found that very difficult. And I guess one of my worst stories from a professional perspective was when I went to a home and I was met by the vendors and they were so excited to meet me, and they said, we've worked for weeks and weeks. We think we're nearly there. We've been decluttering for like 4 weeks now. We think we're ready. And you know, I think it was like a 43-page report later about what they needed to declutter. So I think the lesson I learnt from that, one is be careful how you approach things, but two is that people generally have a hard time seeing their own clutter. You have to be very, very aware, you know, and quite insightful to be able to be objective enough to see your own clutter.
Yeah, well, I think mine's pretty obvious if you attend to my house. But where do you see that people have the biggest problem with clutter in their house?
I think it's generally, I guess the medium level cluttered person has, so the mainstream, sort of the middle of our bell curve clutter people have trouble in closets, in cupboards, in wardrobes, in closets, on desks, on kitchen benches, those sorts of areas. So unless you're a very high-end cluttered person, rarely would your floor be strewn with cluttering pieces. It's more that anywhere where something can sit and thus not trip over. So bookshelves, wardrobes, laundry cupboards, medicine cabinets are an absolute shocker for clutter. All those sorts of areas. So anywhere that we can get away with living our everyday life without being sort of impinged too much by the clutter, we tend to do it.
Do you know, it's funny when you're saying about the floor, because I'm just looking around at my office. I've got heaps of stuff on the floor. I've got shoes and all sorts. My husband hates it. So I, you know, that's my next question really, is what's the connection between clutter and how it manifests in someone's actual life? You know, how does it impact on people?
You know, there's a lot of commentary on this in the literature and in research, and the general gist, I guess, to sum it up, is that when we have a cluttered environment, there's this tendency to be less productive, I guess. So in order to be efficient and productive, it is really important that we're able to work without too many distractions. So people that live in a cluttered office, or for example have a perfect example, and I sometimes do this, I have to be very cognizant of it, is when someone has sort of 7 or 8 web browsers open on their internet and they're trying to work on something, and you're laughing because you do it, don't you, Denise?
I am. I'm just counting mine as you say that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And there you go.
And that's actually a small amount for me.
Yes. And so people, when they're trying to focus on one thing, will end up their screens so clutched and they have these visual distractions in their face, they'll end up clicking on the tab to just see what's going on Twitter, clicking on the tab to see what's going on there, or, oh, yes, I was doing that. And it means, one, it means that people often have a lot of unfinished jobs, and that doesn't necessarily just mean in the workplace. It can be at home as well, but it also means that you're not giving yourself the opportunity to truly focus, concentrate, and be your most productive, effective, and efficient on the one task that you're doing. So I guess clutter, if it was going to be clutter in the home, some people that live in extreme cluttered environments, you know, it actually can manifest in relation to demotivation, in severe cases, depression, feeling bogged down. So it can have quite a, we're very visual animals, humans, and so it can have quite a distracting effect on lots of areas of our life.
That's so interesting, especially when you're saying about the demotivation and depression and anxiety. I mean, there must be, you know, studies around that. I wonder if, you know, they look at how to mental institutions and things like that. I suppose there are studies around colours and things.
Absolutely. Colour is so important in relation to mood. So there are some pretty hard and fast, I guess the best way to put it, there are some pretty hard and fast rules around colour and when to use different sorts of colours. So, you know, we all know that blue is a very calming colour. Red is a very not calming colour. So you would rarely have red in a bedroom because it doesn't promote the feeling of sanctuary. And similarly, I was actually reading the other day, which made me smile, I don't need any pink in my kitchen, but apparently pink often promotes people to want to eat.
Oh, really?
Yes, I hadn't heard that one before, and I was doing some research the other day for some colour consultancy work, and I came across that, which was interesting. But, you know, you were just saying about research. One thing I stumbled across the other day is, you know, the office labels, you know, the Dymo office labels. Have you ever heard of them? They can label everything in your office if you want.
Oh, yeah, like a label machine?
Yeah. So Dymo is a brand of those. And they've put out some literature or some research saying that more than half of their employers equate an employee's organisational skills with their job performance. Mm. So their in-house research has worked out that basically a messy desk is a bottom line factor for employers. Mm. You know? So there has been quite a, especially in the corporate world where, you know, bottom line and productivity really matters. There's been a lot of research into workspace and organisation and declutter, and employers are finding that it does sort of cut into their budget.
Mm. Yeah, and what about the people who work from home?
I think that brings a whole world of issues, to be honest with you, Denise, working from home, and I'm sure you could relate to some of these. There's, you know, issues of getting your head into one space and out of other spaces, but I think working from home not only do you need to ensure that your office space is organized and decluttered to maximize your productivity, it also needs to be a safe space for work. So a space that doesn't have a box of toys for the kids to play in next to you 99% of the time. And a space that you can go to feel like you're at work. And, you know, there was an old adage someone once said to me, it was about working from home, and they said to me that it's important that you still feel like you're working. So although most of us, and I have been known to do this, don't mind knocking out a couple of blogs or a little bit of sample board work in my PJ pants.
Yep.
It is also important. I've certainly done that. It is also important to feel like you're working some days. So, you know, getting up, getting dressed, making a work date of it. And I guess the advantage of that is that then when your work day is done, you can transition back into the rest of the home and leave work in the office. Because that's one complaint I often hear from people that have home offices and are needing some styling done on their home, is that they want to feel like when they leave the office, they enter their home and they're not at work.
Mm. Yeah, that can be a tricky one.
It
for
is.
A lot of entrepreneurs, especially, you know, like me, I love what I do. So my door is always open to my office and,
yes.
you know, we might be making dinner and I'll just jump in and see what's on Twitter and Facebook and then go back and you know, make dinner. And yeah, but what you said just then about getting dressed, I mean, the last couple of days, to be honest, I've been wearing my yoga pants and things like that. And then this morning, Mark went for his run and I thought, I'm going to get in the shower before him because he always uses the hot water.
Ah.
And so I was dressed at 7:30, you know, in real clothes, and that's so unusual for me. And it does feel different.
It does feel different. And, you know, there are some days that it's a great different. You know, it's a great different to stay in your sloggies. It's a great different to stay in your PJ pants. And sometimes they're often my most productive days. But I think as a habit or as a routine, it is nice to, and I don't mean suit and tie or, you know, stockings, but I mean sort of get into clothes that, right, I'm ready to start my day. And some people manage the, you were just talking about, you know, transitioning from cooking dinner to tweeting and Facebooking, and when it is a love and a passion, and I'm absolutely not at fault, but I'm guilty of that as well. Like my downtime is reading interiors magazines, and you know, my husband's like, "Are you working?" I'm like, "No, this is my chill time. I love it.
You love it.
I love what I do. So this is feeding my soul." But I think some people that aren't in that position, one of the biggest problems is tearing themselves away from the office and from the computer and from the demands. I think maybe that's a little different. If it's a demand that you're having to go back to deal with into the office space compared to if it's something you're going back because you love.
Yeah, that's true. Because I don't think I'll ever have a big separation between my work and play, and a lot of my clients are the same. You know, they are their businesses, and that's great. But one thing you were saying before about your, you know, the people that you go into to help stage their home and declutter.
Yes.
Can you tell us some of the success stories around that? You know, have you seen a real difference in people's lives, or obviously they sell their houses much quicker and things like that, but, you know, from them, from a personal point of view, after you've come in and helped them with that?
Absolutely. One of the best stories was actually the family that said they'd been decluttering for 4 weeks. So they had had this family home for 30 years. They had raised 4 children there, and a highly motivated woman. She's a wonderful vendor. And although at first when she sort of read the action plan and what needed to be done, she was a little overwhelmed. She literally rolled up a tracky pants and put on a hat, which is very unlike her because she's a very well-kept woman, and she dug in and she worked, her and her husband worked solidly for 4 days. They filled an additional 3 storage pods with items from their home that shouldn't and didn't need to be there. And we talked about some of the decluttering strategies, not just to sell, but also there's something nice about not taking clutter with you into your new home when you're selling. So it's not always just about the sale and getting everything out. It's also, there's a little bit of therapy in there about a cleansing and a starting of a new process in the new home. And it was a phenomenal success story. And the overwhelming feeling that they're experiencing at the beginning of the process was so contrary to the empowerment and the motivated feeling that they're feeling at the end. They saw things in their home they'd never seen before. You know, I asked her to pop some cushions on a bench that was by the front door. And when I went back to see her, she said, "I've never sat on this seat before."
Wow.
She said, "And I've realised I can see the ocean from this seat." She said, "And I've never sat here. I've never taken the time to sit here." And it was just, it was wonderful, highly motivated. And I think there was a whole world of I can do, you know, a really great cleansing feeling.
That's a really inspiring story. And how metaphorical is that too? You know, I can see the ocean from here. I can see new possibilities for my life. A new perspective.
Absolutely. And it's funny, I had an acquaintance the other day scan through the website, and one of the photos on the website, or the old website, was actually of my home. And she said to me, is that your home? And I said, yes, it is. And she said, we can never come to mine. And I said, why is that? And she said, my home is riddled with clutter. And I said, oh, okay. And she must be very self-aware, because she said to me, I feel like the clutter in my home is a metaphor for my life. And if I delved into that, I might have to delve into far too many other aspects of my life that I'm just not ready for.
Oh, do you know what? That's my next question, actually, is that, yeah, because a lot of people feel the same way when they want to try and declutter emotionally. It's like they just don't want to look at some stuff because they might unleash who knows what.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what do you think people are afraid of around decluttering?
I think maybe part of it might be about a lot of clutter is things we've collected through our life.
Yeah.
And so
yes, literally, metaphorically,
literally,
everything. Yeah.
Literally, yes. And so some people, I think, are a little concerned about having to sift through literally the stuff that represents their past, whether it be, you know, a marriage, a divorce, a loss, anything, you know. I'm literally about maybe sifting through and letting go. In some places it mightn't even be something negative. It might be sifting through the boxes of baby clothes that are in the cupboard and your children are 16, you know, and it's that you're not interested in sifting through them because you want to hold on to the fact that they were babies.
Yes.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be, excuse me, a poor experience that people are not wanting to face. Maybe it's, I find with a lot of my clients, they're really time poor. Not necessarily poor motivation, but time poor, and it's not seen as a priority to them. And it is very much a spiraling effect. I feel that the larger the clutter gets, the more there's a I don't have time or I can't do. It's just beyond me. I guess a lot of people feel. I'm not quite sure what they're frightened of, whether it's too big of a job or whether there are things that they're just not ready to metaphorically sift through as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, some of my clients are going through big shifts at the moment. So it could be new jobs or relationship changes, good and bad, you know, so people want to feel like they want to leave their partner. Some people are just coming into new relationships. Some people are single and want to attract new relationships. You know, so these big changes are going on in their lives. How do you think that their environment can support them through some of those processes or shifts?
Look, I think most of us aren't naturally apt at handling change. Some are better than others at handling change. And I think something that's really important when big change is happening in life is to feel safe. And one of the places that, and that's one of the reasons often people, from my perspective, aren't up for change because it's not that safe feeling. So one way that your environment or your space can support that is by having something that's yours, having a sanctuary where you feel in control, you feel empowered, you feel focused, and you have a really good sense of well-being in all domains. Of your well-being, and I feel that if you can have a space that encompasses all those things that is yours, I guess it's a bit like an earthing and a balancing effect. That you may be feeling a bit edgy about these big changes that are happening, but you have somewhere safe that's yours, somewhere safe that you can rest.
And if they Do you think that there are common elements to that kind of space, or do you think it is different for every person?
Oh, look, I think broadly speaking, obviously there are some individuals, like there are some people that will tell you that they thrive in clutter, you know, and maybe they do, you know, because everyone's very, very different. But for the mainstream people, regardless of what their style, like their style diagnostic is, whether it's traditional or country or modern or eclectic or beachy, regardless of that, I think some of the qualities of a space that can make you feel that way, that is a sanctuary, is obviously meeting your style, so identifying what your style is and making sure that you surround yourselves with things that fit that style.
Mm-hmm.
Light is exceptionally important on mood and how we feel.
Yeah.
So a brightly floodlit fluoro room is not really going to be comforting or a sanctuary for anyone. And there's some amazing things you can do with lamps. It doesn't have to be installing a complete ceiling or bulkhead of light. It can be using lamps to create the room and space that you want. Textiles is another thing. We're very kinesthetic animals, very visual and kinesthetic as humans, and so being able to touch things that we affiliate with. Where for some people it might be velvet, for others it might be really rough, rustic textures. But so identifying things that really resonate with you and your style and putting them in the space. I think that's very important. And being uncluttered. Have a space where you're not distracted by the pile of bills that need to be paid or the pile of bills that you've paid that need to be filed. Somewhere where you can just be. I think that's very important for the sanctuary.
Absolutely. I'd say my office is one of those spaces, but I also have a little, right in front of my computer on my windowsill, I've got beautiful little rocks and a little Buddha and some flowers and it's really nice just having that little space that my eyes rest on every day.
Absolutely.
It's lovely. It's like a little altar.
Yes. And it's, positivity. You know, outside of my office space is a beautiful standard deciduous tree. And I look out my windows and I get to rest my eyes on that. And that's exactly what it is. It's about resting, you know. And I think feeling safe, having somewhere where you're not constantly distracted by the things that you should be doing or should have done or need to do is really important. And clutter, unfortunately, brings a pile of those should do, need to, don't want to.
Yes, it does. Yeah,
it does.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm speaking from experience. Absolutely. What about if you're renting?
Yes,
renting a place and you can't really change things up too much.
That can be really difficult. But the good thing is that if we look at design elements, so if we had a blank room and we looked at walls and fixed lighting and flooring, they'd be the main things that in a rental home you probably couldn't fool with.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're looking to stay there long term and you had a landlord that was just delightful. So things like wall colour, that's difficult. Fixed lighting, that's difficult. And floor covering, that's quite difficult. However, all the other things that we layer rooms with when we style a room, you can really make your own. So beautiful, oversized rugs for the floor, which will really set the scene for the space. Fantastic pieces of furniture, not necessarily expensive, but just fantastic pieces of furniture that suit your style. Lighting, so mood lighting, table lamps, floor lamps, and art. If you have, for example, walls that you just find hideous, find an oversized piece of art that you can use for them. And this could be as simple as finding wallpaper you like and covering a piece of wood in it and leaning the piece of wood against the wall.
Oh, cool.
You know, it doesn't have to be, although there are removable wallpapers, I must admit there are some fantastic removable and reusable wallpapers, which are just phenomenal for renters. But there are things that literally can be not fixed to walls. So
can you explain the wood thing with the wallpaper? That sounds really interesting.
It would be similar to buying an oversized canvas, you know, the stretched canvases, or going to Bunnings and getting yourself a huge piece, if you wanted it to be really big, a huge piece of MDF, so compressed board, and go down to your local wallpaper store, or you can get onto Silk. I can get you some beautiful wallpapers, and then you wallpaper the piece of wood. So whether it be a metre by metre or a 3 metre by 3 metre piece, you wallpaper it, and that becomes your wall art. So you're not actually fixing anything to the wall at all.
That sounds awesome.
It is very cool. Another thing that's very cool, it wouldn't work for something as big as 3 metres by 3 metres, but it works for lots of the art that I use in my staging, are the, without overtly advertising, have you seen the 3M removable picture hooks?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so they actually do work, and if you remove them properly, which isn't hard, they don't take paint off the walls and they don't leave marks. And so that's another great way of being able to put art onto a wall, which really helps frame up the room, of, you know, sort of frame it up as your room. So I guess if you're in a property that doesn't feel good and doesn't resonate with you, try not to focus on the walls and the floor covering and the fixed lighting that you can't change, and focus on all the things you can layer in there that will build up a picture of who you are.
I love it. I'm really inspired.
Oh,
I am.
That's good.
Great. Okay, so here's another question for you, another what if.
Okay.
What if you've got a partner that's got very different tastes and things to you? Now, it doesn't apply to me because Mark and I have got very similar tastes.
Yes.
But I know sometimes this is what happens with a lot of my clients. They say, Denise, I'm trying to be positive and I'm trying to change my life and shift everything. But, you know, my husband or my partner or my boyfriend is just not being supportive and is actually almost sabotaging me. So that must happen with houses and with spaces quite a bit.
A lot. It really does. It happens with home staging a lot. And I think it comes down to, in many cases, as most people are very aware, men and women think very differently. And, for example, in real estate, we think and we act very differently, generally speaking. So these are obviously broad sweeping statements, but there are exceptions to rules. However, you know, women are much more emotional about real estate and buying and selling, and men aren't. So often with staging, the women understand and embrace the concept of making the home an experience for the buyer, whereas the men look at the pragmatics and are more often saying, it doesn't change how many bedrooms and how many bathrooms we have and how big our yard is. So it is very different in that context, but I guess in relation to if you're styling your home, and you have very, very different opinions, it can be really difficult. I was actually reading an article the other day where a husband and wife actually ended up sleeping and having separate bedrooms because they could not come to middle ground on what, for their bedroom, on what was a sanctuary that would fit both, which is extreme for them to sleep
sad.
In. Yes, it's an extreme to sleep in separate rooms. So I guess in circumstances where you really can't come to a middle ground, it would be it would be very clever to engage a stylist or a designer, because often when it's not your area of expertise, sometimes, and when you're so fixed on what you love, sometimes it is difficult to imagine that there'd be somewhere in the middle that might suit both.
Yes.
So getting someone from the outside who's objective and has really good styling and design knowledge will hopefully be able to work out each of your style diagnostics and try and find somewhere in the middle that will suit both styles. And I guess another thing, which is something that as most couples need to do often in life, because life sometimes in life compromises essential, is also work out on a scale of 1 to 10 how important it is to you and get your partner to do the same. And, you know, if for example, I say to my husband, you know, this is a 9 out of 10 for me, this is extremely important, and he might look and go, yeah, it's a 3 for me. Do I really need to push this issue? So I think it's important, one, to get expert help in to see whether you can find something in the middle that's going to suit everyone's palate. And I think objectivity is really essential in that circumstance. And I guess the other one is, as you would talk to your clients about, I'm sure, is about communicating openly about what your likes and dislikes are and how important or not important it is to you.
Yeah, I think that's a good. I think that's a really good idea, having that neutral person.
Absolutely.
To kind of mediate.
And you know, sometimes it can be, it could be something. So, for example, how do I describe it? So, a client that I did not long ago, there was nothing in this bedroom other than a bedspread, which was white and had a tiny touch of colour on it, and there was absolutely nothing else in the room. And the wife said to me, I'm not allowed to have anything in the room and make it girly. I said, okay. And so we dressed the room with white side tables with art above the bed, and we put in lamps. And the husband walked in and went, wow, this is delightful. She felt it was still feminine. There weren't flowers, but she felt it was still very feminine, what we had done. He didn't feel it was overtly feminine. So I guess it's also about identifying, for example, in this circumstance, what he felt was feminine. You know, often he might have said, I don't want anything feminine. And her perception of what feminine looks like to him was obviously very different to what it was for him. And so that's another important thing. Everyone visualises things very differently.
Yes, this is true. I was just wondering for someone like me, I'm obviously a life coach and I teach people about surrounding themselves with positivity, but do you think that it could maybe go a little bit too far? You know, I mean, in my office it's appropriate because I've got my dream boards above my office and I've got little sayings and things everywhere, but do you feel like sometimes that could go a bit too far?
I think when it comes to the point of clutter, it could.
Yeah.
So, for example, I'm with you. I have sort of my values and my goals. I have it on the fridge. I have it in my office. I have my dream boards up. And I think it's important that it still remains ordered, that it doesn't become too clutter orientated. I think positivity and surrounding yourself in those sorts of things is really important, as long as it doesn't become visually distracting. It's great that it becomes a reminder. You know, seeing my goal every day when I get something out of the fridge, or, you know, 20 times a day is perfect. But I don't have my fridge. I don't have, school notes and bills and garbage collection notices cluttering my fridge. I have my goal on the fridge.
Yeah. Well, you just said something really important about the school notes. So I don't have kids, and I know that you do.
Yes.
And probably about half of my clients have kids as well. Is it much harder to have a decluttered environment when you've got kids?
I think it is, to be honest with you, from the perspective of children don't have that higher cognitive function that identifies clutter and that even thinks that it's important to minimise it. So I think there's always, with everything, moderation is really important. I might really be quite strict with my decluttering in my home. However, if you came into my house in the middle of the day, there would be toys strewn everywhere. Mm. And I'm at the point where I'm okay with that, because at night when I clean up with the bigger kids and then I clean up the baby's things, that the house returns to not a decluttered state. So I think it's important to identify between clutter and between the mess of living when we have children, or even when we don't. Like it is nearly impossible to live without mess. Like it is just nearly impossible. And I think if we were to be fighting that with when we have children, you could end up going around in circles and causing yourself a whole world of anxiety. So I think it's important that we identify the difference between, you know, baskets of toys on the floor that clean up within 5 minutes at night and, you know, a 6 months worth of school notes and newsletters on the table.
Mm, yeah,
so
that's a really good
clutter.
Point, yeah.
You know, that's clutter and the toys on the floor aren't.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's funny because as a childless woman, you know, I keep on thinking, well, I'm just not going to buy my kids lots of toys.
Everyone else does.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it's impossible to avoid.
Nearly everything's a toy. Tupperware's a toy.
Exactly. Well, I'll probably be that kind of mum who'll just make them declutter their stuff every now and again and throw it out. But that brings me to my next question, actually, about, you know, how brutal can you be with decluttering? Because I wouldn't say I'm a particularly sentimental person, so I go through a stage maybe once a year where I'm just so unbelievably brutal with the things that I throw out, like old love letters and, you know, photos of exes and presents that people have given me, you know, and I just go absolutely unbelievably brutal. So, you know, can you keep stuff like that that's kind of old? What's your limit, or how do you have that balance between being sentimental and being a hoarder, or being too brutal?
It's a very fine line, isn't it? It is a very fine line, and I am pretty brutal as well. I'm brutal on the behalf of my children, which is kind of probably even worse. I often go into their room while they're sleeping with a bag and declutter.
You do not.
I do so.
Do they remember in the morning?
No. Or often I say, oh, sweetheart, I don't know where you put that.
That's evil. But great.
But it works, because then there's more space for them to put something more treasured up there. So it's never truly treasured things, but it's often a lot of clutter. So you can be brutal, and I guess there's a really good system that you can use. You get four big boxes and you label the boxes. So you label them trash.
Yep.
So anything in your home that's broken, that doesn't work anymore, that's half missing, goes into the trash. There's no question about it. Yep. Anything that's old, any bills that are past a certain date, so, you know, if you've got two current phone bills, shred or get rid of the others, and while you're at it, get online and get them delivered online rather than in paper.
Yep.
So all that sort of stuff goes into the trash box. The next box is store. So they're things that you use in the home that you really can't throw out, that you do need in the home but can resemble clutter. And I'll get back to the store box in a minute. Mm-hmm. The next box is really don't need. So look at donating, selling on eBay. So these might be things like clothes you haven't worn in a year, shoes you haven't worn in 2 years, hats that were in 5 years ago that were never in, that you need to get rid of. So they can go to Vinnie's, eBay, give them to somebody, re-gift them, gifts that you've never opened and you detest. Wrap them up in Christmas paper, write on the outside, you know, adult female, adult male, child female, and when Christmas comes, go pop them under one of the charity Christmas trees.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then there's the last box, which is the box I guess you were talking about, which is the sentimentally books, if there are some things that you truly, truly cannot part with, and everyone has a different level of not parting with things, if you really can't part with it, pop it in a box, but it gets stored. Mm. If it's not something that you use, that you view, that you thumb through, you know, on a 6 monthly basis, like if you don't revisit your love letters from when you're a teenager every 6 months, then pop them in storage and they can either go into the garage or go off site. Because the likelihood, and if you haven't opened that box in 5 years, if you haven't opened that box in 10 years, the box goes in the bin.
Wow, the whole box.
The box.
Wow.
So I did that when I moved house recently. I've been in my home, my new home now for 3 years, and at 2 years when I hadn't opened any of the boxes that were in the garage, I threw them out.
Wow.
So there weren't, yeah, well, you know, when they weren't sentimental items. It's not like they were photos of my grandparents. They were stuff we have in our home, you know, that we think we need, but if we haven't even looked in the boxes in 2 years, I don't know whether we really need them in our home.
Yeah.
Is that harsh?
No, I don't think it is. And I suppose you can always scan stuff if you...
Absolutely.
You know, if you really want to keep it. But, yeah, I think from an energetic point of view, some things like that can just go. Because
yep.
especially if you want to attract more love in your life or... you know, get over a partner. I think sometimes you can take it, but, you know, I've just heard of people just holding on to those kind of things because they like to, I don't know, I guess remember that someone loved them enough to do it.
Yes.
It can be difficult to get rid of those feelings. And same with, you know, things like clothes. Like I read about a woman, it was on Oprah, and she was, 45 and kind of a bit overweight, and she kept her cheerleading outfit from when she was 16.
Oh, wow.
Because it was just one of those things that she just remembered when she was, you know, popular high school cheerleader.
Yep.
And
I guess that ties
in
with what
lovely.
We were talking about earlier, doesn't it, about what's the opposition often to decluttering?
Yeah.
And it's that people have to sift through some things. So she would have had to sift through, you know, her weight and why she was that weight and, you know, what she's going to do about it and... You know, so I think maybe for those people that that are sentimental and aren't sure, like you were saying about someone who's maybe looking to attract more love into their life, it doesn't mean you have to get rid of it, but pop it in a box and store it away. Create some space in your life to invite new love into it rather than having the stagnant energy of the old love there. You don't
Definitely.
Have to forget or get rid of, but make some space. Make some free, positive, productive space.
Definitely. I think that's a good place to end on, to be honest, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's
Absolutely.
Creating space for something new to manifest in your life.
Yep. To allow your productivity, your efficiency, your creativity bloom, which when it's pinned down by clutter, it's really hard work.
Yeah. And why would you want that?
Oh, we wouldn't
make it hard.
That's right.
Make it hard. There's no point.
We don't want anything to be hard.
Exactly. Is there anything else you want to share with us before we finish?
Absolutely not. It was a pleasure talking to you. I hope that all your listeners get a lot from it, and I'll make sure I keep you informed. Although it's not quite at finished form yet, my next ebook out will be about decluttering. So I'll make sure I keep you in the loop with that, and you can let all your listeners know.
Fantastic. Do you have a title for it yet, or it's still in the...
No, still a bit embryonic. Just the body written at the moment.
Oh, perfect. Can you just tell us your website again so we know where to go to get that?
Absolutely. It's www.silkstaging.com.au.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Naomi. That was just such
You're welcome.
An interesting topic, and I know that people are going to love it. I know I've definitely been inspired. I'm going to get off the call, and I'm going to do some decluttering straight away. No, I really am, and also I'm really inspired by some of your design ideas, like the beautiful things on the walls and maybe some rugs. So I'm definitely going to be looking at my space with new eyes after hearing your opinion and your expertise. So thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely.
That was just It was wonderful. So again, this was Denise Duffield Thomas from deniseduffieldthomas.com interviewing the lovely Naomi Findlay, and we will speak to you again soon. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.